But right now, we want to welcome you to another edition of Through Science to Health with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and Lynn Sorensen, RN, retired, longtime community member of Fort Townsend and an advocate for public health awareness and promotion. And Lynn is a member of KPTZ's Virus Watch team and the emergency response team. On alternate Fridays at 12:10 p.m., we bring you discussion and updates surrounding the pandemic and review some of the insights and journey of discovery surrounding COVID-19. Lynn Sorensen, welcome to Through Science to Health.
Thank you, Chris.
All right. Well, we've got a few things we want to take care of here. And one of those is just sort of giving you some bits and pieces, both locally and nationally, about some of the things that are happening surrounding COVID-19. The National Institutes for Health, a clinical trial to test antibodies and other experimental therapeutics for mild and moderate COVID-19 is happening or about to happen. It's an investigational monoclonal antibody developed by Eli Lilly. That's the first test out of the box, and that was in collaboration with a lab out of Vancouver. And there'll be the first therapeutic tested in the trial, initially from a blood sample from a recovered COVID-19 patient. And then copies were synthesized in the lab, and that's how we get the term monoclonal. Also, the National Institutes for Health has launched the Medical Imaging and Data Resource Center, MIDRC, and it's an ambitious effort that will harness the power of artificial intelligence in medical imaging to fight COVID-19, and it'll provide ways to rapidly turn scientific findings into practical imaging tools. And the Governor Inslee announced updates for Phase 2 and Phase 3 that include clarification on when facial coverings are required in indoor fitness facilities and changes to calculation of occupancy limits for large facilities and allowance for fitness and sports training other than group fitness classes. And if you want more information on that, you can easily subscribe to the updates and press releases from the governor's office. Just Google Inslee press updates. Local testing. Turnaround time is quick, around 24 hours through the UW labs. Some tests can be done at Jefferson Healthcare for pre-surgical tests or ER patients, but they're limited in their testing. Well, Lynn, a lot going on here, and let's talk about some of this. I know that there are some articles that have just come out that both of us have sort of perused, and maybe we can do some comments on that. But what's happening? What's happening in the general projections and both statewide and nationally and locally? And let's see if we can get some of that up to date.
Yeah, well, as of yesterday, Jefferson County is still at 54 cases, and they have done over 5,000 tests. And as of yesterday, 56 of those were pending. So we have not had a new case since Monday, August 3rd. And but the projections, and this is through the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation out of the UW, is looking not very good at all. And this is based on whether or not we use our masks or not. In large part, they say by December 1st, there'll be greater than 5,000 deaths a day if mandates are eased, meaning we don't do the social distancing, we're not wearing our masks. But if universally everyone wore their masks, they project that it could be less than 1,000 deaths per day, which is still very significant. And the total deaths, they're saying by December 1st, with the mandates eased, could be as high as 400,000 people. And with the universal mask wearing, it could be in the 250,000 range. Now, we're already past 150,000 deaths in the United States. So I mean, it's not looking good. The pandemic is not going away by any means, and we're still a long way from getting a vaccine.
Well, we are, and I was just taking a look at some of these projections on the graphs that that you sent along, and it's pretty sobering. And I think it's just all the more incentive for all of us to not only take our own personal initiative in health and staying healthy, but also to realize that what we do every day to prevent the spread of COVID has an awful lot to do with looking after our neighbor.
It all has an impact. And so, again, we want to encourage people to continue wearing their masks. And, I mean, it's just so important, and that with the social distancing. And I heard a clarification, I think it was from this week's update by Dr. Tom Locke about the five people number per week. And he was saying that that's five people in a week's time, not five people per day. So that really does limit any outdoor social gathering that we might have. But that is one thing that can help also safeguard our exposure or possible transmission for those that are have no symptoms but yet are carriers.
Well, the old, it's not really becoming a cliche because there's so much truth in it, but the whole idea that we are in all this together, and we need to keep that foremost in our minds because we're social creatures, we're huggers, and we are used to dealing with one another on much more intimate bases, and we just have to hang in there. And look out after one another. It's just the most important thing we can do right now.
It is. And also something I was reading about this morning is the actual number of contact tracing that is going on throughout the country. And NPR did a survey that really there are only four states plus Washington, D.C. that currently have enough contact tracers actually calling people and identifying their contacts from positive cases. And let's see, there's three more states that have enough when they use reserve staff, but there are 38 states, and Washington is included in that, that do not have enough contact tracers employed. And any delay in this contact tracing delays the possible testing getting done, and so that the contacts of the positives are still going out and possibly starting other infections. And I was trying to see on the state's website for Washington State how many contact tracers we actually have employed, and there's a section that you can click on, but there's no answer to that on the Department of Health website. So I'm a little concerned about that because I think that Governor Inslee said some time ago that he'd hope to get like 30,000 contact tracers. Do you remember?
I don't remember specifically, but it's a huge number.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, what do we have now? I have no idea. That is, you know, it's only one tool, but it's a very valuable tool, and it's something that we're going to need.
Well, that'd be
forever, really.
Yeah, that'd be a good question for Dr. Locke when we have our next meeting in the county here. When you're mentioning contact tracing and testing, local testing, what's the turnaround time right now for getting testing done here in the county?
As of what Julia Danskin from the Public Health Department was saying yesterday, it's been very remarkably good, and we're still sending our samples through the UW lab, and she was saying 24 hours is about what it takes. But we do have some limited testing available here at Jefferson Healthcare Hospital. Like they can do, I think, the pre-surgical tests, and or if they have someone in the ER that they need a test done, you know, pronto, I think they're able to do that. But they don't have, I mean, it's not a high-capacity lab for testing. That's why the UW lab is still being used, and its turnout is remarkable. I mean, I know there are other commercial labs where people have been waiting up to a week to get their lab results. And that's, you know, that's concerning, because during that whole time, are these people quarantining themselves so they don't spread it again? I mean, if they went in and got the test, they'd probably have some concerns.
And then also, just that latency period where it would be so beneficial to be able to send somebody out and follow up on that.
Yeah, so it's like a domino effect. And we need all of these things in place, and we're going to need them in place for a long time to come.
Well, you know, Lynn, there were some articles that, well, there are always articles coming out on this subject, whether it be the virus itself or whether it be discussions about immunity and all of the things that we're discovering on a daily basis or even just an hourly basis for what's happening with this virus and what the repercussions are. And I know that I think it would be really helpful for you to talk a little bit about the immune system and how complicated it is and actually what happens, you know, the difference between the general everyday definition of immunity as opposed to what that means in the whole system of cells that are created in order to combat other cells.
Yeah, got a great article in The Atlantic. This was dated on August 5th, and it's quite a long article. But the point of this was how complicated the immune system is, so that it's probably the most complex in the human body outside of the brain. And even the word immunity can create confusion, because immunologists use it as the immune system has responded to a pathogen, whereas everyone else uses the term and they mean and hope that they are protected from an infection, that they are immune. But an immune response doesn't necessarily provide immunity. It all depends on how effective, numerous, and durable the antibodies in the cells are that are made through the response.
Lynn,
very complicated.
Yeah, is that what they mean by an autoimmune response isn't necessarily a good thing?
Oh, well, autoimmune, and there's autoimmune diseases, and these are where your body's actually fighting you.
Yep.
So that is not what you want. And some of that is happening, though, in the response to the COVID-19 virus. The immune system has kind of gone crazy, and it's responding and attacking the virus, but it's also responding too well, that it's almost gotten, all the systems are go as far as attacking the virus, and it in turn actually hurts the person. They don't know why this is happening, why the response is that way. I mean, there's so much they don't know about this, and people can clear the virus after some few weeks of very nasty symptoms, and some don't. They don't know why that is, and sometimes they get into an immunosuppressed state, and then this allows the virus to migrate deeper into the body and affect other organs, kidneys, blood vessels, GI symptoms. The symptoms for COVID-19 are tremendously long. I mean, it can be, we initially thought it was a respiratory thing, but it affects the GI systems. It can cause muscle aching, bone pain, terrible fatigue. It goes on and on. And so the very simple ones that we were talking about initially, cough, fever, fatigue, these things are not necessarily, markers for the disease anymore. Yes, they can play into it, but a number of people don't have fever. A number of people don't have the cough, yet they can test positive. So I don't know how we're going to get on top of this, except with a vaccine that can be developed, and it will be developed but the timeline isn't going to be October like the administration is touting. I don't believe that's going to be the time that vaccine is prepared. And if and when the vaccine is available,
you know,
how are you going to give it to 300 million people?
Yes, it's the next step and the next. I mean, that's why the Operation Warp Speed is warping and speeding is because the necessity of being able to do the clinical trials, but do them simultaneously with several attempts, except one at a time, so that the time between discovery and efficacy is. Determined in a faster manner. But it also brings to mind the whole idea of education and accurate education and the openness for our leadership and also the public to be receptive to all of these discoveries that are happening on a daily basis. It's very important because some of the things that were a good thing to do yesterday may not be a good thing to do today and vice versa. But I guess the lesson here is that this virus is not a political animal. It is bipartisan. and we can't continue to politicize this situation and make certain ways of doing things either a stand for liberty or a concern for your fellow man. And I just, mask wearing, of course, is probably one of the most obvious things. But also, having an informed leadership that's willing to listen to the science is extremely important.
Yeah. And I don't see that type of leadership coming into play until maybe January. But I think overall, you know, just think where we were in December. We've gone, you know, this first 9 months of 2020 from discovering the virus and up to, I've read this morning that there are more than 165 candidate vaccines that are being created in record time, and that 27 of those are already in human trials. And the phase three of the vaccine production is where they have to see the efficacy in groups of tens of thousands of people. I mean, so that is going to take some time. And what I was saying about, you know, yes, okay, we can get a vaccine going, and okay, we're got them all in vials, and we're going to give them. But an NPR survey said that 20% of Americans already said they're going to refuse to get the vaccine, and 31% are unsure. So that's over 50% of Americans, you know, uncertain about a vaccine, and herd immunity, which we've all heard about, requires about 70% of the population to be either immune from the actual disease or vaccinated. And I don't see us reaching any herd immunity status anytime soon.
Well, I think,
so
Lynn,
that's very concerning.
Yeah, and I think, Lynn, that's concerning. I know there's always going to be a certain portion of the population that's just emphatically against the whole idea of immunization, but that's just something that we have to live with as human beings. But the other part is, the other crucial part is education, educating the population, making sure that they understand the science as best possible, and to continue to keep, you know, to establish this information network that's accurate and not misleading and to the point, so that people can really understand why they need to get behind some of these protocols, because some of these protocols might be very, very old. But yeah, that's all we have right
Wash
now.
Wash your hands. That's about as old as it gets.
Yeah, I know.
So.
Well, you know, we have a few minutes. Actually, we kind of go over time, but that's sorry. We'll go over time a few minutes. But I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about education and the dilemma that we're facing as a country about whether or not to go back to school, among other things.
Yeah. Yeah, and the, so there's schools that have reopened in other parts of the country, and there are already hundreds of people that have come, you know, back positive out of those experiences. And so I don't think that bodes well at all for in-classroom schools. I know that the Port Townsend schools are still deciding what they're going to do, and but the school will resume as of September 8th. And also that Jefferson County is one of the five counties in the state of Washington that actually considered low risk because of our numbers is low risk in the sense of having people attend actual classroom education. And it again, it's going to be very difficult, and I think they'll probably come up with something, you know, remote and in-person mix, but
yeah, some kind of a hybrid mix, I think, is probably in the offing. I know that New York is opening all their schools. Heard that today.
But he also said that that doesn't mean they won't be closed.
That they won't be closed. You know, I know, exactly. Yeah. So, well, it's just a lot to think about and to be informed. And I just want to take the opportunity to thank all of our teachers, all of our educators, and all of our nonprofits that are involved in taking care of our children.
Yes.
Because they are the administrators, the people in the trenches, everyone that's has the welfare of the child predominantly in mind, and I think generally more socially conscious than political in that nature. So I just want to thank all of them.
I go along with that as well.
All right. Well, Lynn, we're gonna sign off again, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. And
okay.
Until next time, this is Chris Bricker and Lynn Sorensen saying, get some fresh air, open up your windows for natural daylight, take walks, ride your bike, check in on your family and friends, and those less fortunate, wash your hands, wear your mask in public, and stay safe.
And you can still smile behind that mask.
That's correct. All right. Okay.
We'll
talk to you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.